Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Broadcasting from around the world, you're listening to The First 100, a podcast on how founders acquired their first 100 paying customers. Here's your host, Hadi Radwan.
Good to have you on the show, Nosheen. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. Thank you for stopping by. You're doing something amazing for the world. Let me start with a quick introduction. Nosheen Hashemi is the founder and CEO of January, who has developed a platform that predicts diabetic patients' response to certain foods. And you've raised to date more than $40 million from notable investors like Felicis Ventures, Mark Benioff, Stephen Chen, and Marisa Meyer. And I think you talked in many of your interviews about how in the U.S., one out of three people have some form of pre-diabetes, and they 90% don't know about it. And then one out of three have diabetes, and 20% don't know about it. So blood sugar seems like it's a very hot topic that people are not very well educated about. And you've done something very interesting in your app, is you have this algorithm that enables accurate prediction of glucose response from foods logged in the app, and you're doing that through AI, and we'd love to dive deeper into this. So Nosheen, tell us, what inspired you to build January?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I was having some medical issues in the family. My mother was misdiagnosed as having asthma. She actually had heart disease and almost died. And my father was diagnosed late for his disease and did die. And I was very interested. I was in the room when he was told he had stage four. And interestingly, he had been under the care of this oncology department for 8 years for a different cancer. And I just didn't understand why they didn't check him for a second cancer. And so I was very obsessed with prevention. I'm still obsessed with prevention, but that sort of got me going at that time. And so my obsession with prevention kind of led me into like the state of medical research and kind of where things are in labs versus standard of care. And it led me to this concept of multiomics. And this concept of multiomics is the concept that you want to have a whole view of your health. Today, when people talk about whole view of their health, they're talking about social, mental, and like physical health. But there are more elements to those. For example, your genetics and your microbiome and the wearables that you use kind of tell us a lot about how you spend your time and the state of mind that you have, as well as just pick up biomedical markers. And also there's proteomics and metabolomics and different angles of your health. And when you put these little pieces together, a picture emerges that is more holistic and more telling of your condition. So I became really interested in this, and I found Mike Snyder, who's been doing multiomic studies for a long, long time. And Mike Snyder and I believe that we wanted to bring multiomics to the masses, but we wanted to do it inexpensively. So we thought wearables are going to grow and grow, and they're going to be more on more and more people. They're going to get smaller, smarter, less expensive. And it was a really great way to understand what's going on inside someone's body and trying to understand, you know, so try to take advantage of the fact that wearables are going from just counting your steps to now looking inside your body for, let's say, your blood sugar or looking at your ketone levels and things like that. So so that's sort of, and Mike Snyder has type 2. So that led us, he said, you know, let's go with wearables and let's start with metabolic health. Yeah, the numbers at the time when I started, 84 million people at the time had prediabetes. And that number now in 6 years later is 96 million people have prediabetes. So one out of three people have prediabetes and 90% of them don't know it. One out of nine people have diabetes and 22% of those people are not diagnosed. So it's something that's pretty common, but it's going unscreened The United States healthcare system doesn't believe in screening people for diabetes or prediabetes unless you are obese and are over 40, which is, I think, a crazy idea. I think everyone in America should be screened for metabolic disease because of the high propensity. So the problem was big. The problem is big. It's only getting bigger. And we started it because we thought that wearables could play a really big role in helping us not only understand what's going on with people, but also help them manage it. And that's what we've done. I can get more into the AI if you're interested. But basically, we take different inputs from wearables and user-reported data. And we've had three stages, essentially. The first stage of our company, which was 2018 to 2020. In those 3 years, we were essentially getting all this user data and wearable data. And we built a prediction model that was predicting glucose for you while you were wearing your CGM. So while you were wearing your CGM, we could see that, you know, your glucose is going to go up and down, or we could figure out what you're going to eat next and then assume, you know, and predict, assume what you're going to eat next and then predict your glucose level. So we could say that, you know, this person ate A, B, and C, and now we can predict the response to D, E, and F. So that was really magical and amazing. And that's what we put out in 2020. And we were published in multiple places. And the next stage, next 2 years, we got to a point where we could actually train with wearables and then remove wearables and still predict for you highly accurately without wearing the wearable anymore, which was kind of crazy. Pretty magical, but it's not magic, it's science. And more recently, so that was 2022. And more recently, we are able to predict glucose for people who've never worn a sensor at all based on the knowledge of that we have, based on the data that we have from people who have worn sensors. So now we are able to make some sort of population level recommendations for people based on, again, user-reported data that they have, which is basically their demographics, their disease state, you know, whether they know they have prediabetes or diabetes, and their foods. If people actually log their food fairly religiously, the more and more accurate their numbers become. We think that the significance of this is that essentially not everyone can afford these expensive sensors. And in spite of what we would like to see, they're not coming down in price soon. They're still holding their numbers as they do for diabetes people. They are holding, you know, sensors are made for people with diabetes, but they're being worn by people who don't have diabetes, but they still pay the same price. And so the price is not coming down. So in order to essentially avail the mainstream world of this great technology, we're using AI. And AI helps you leapfrog, much like, you know, wireless technology helped you leapfrog, sort of putting down a lot of wires. And like Africa kind of, you know, leapfrogged forward. Because it didn't have to go through the same lengthy sort of infrastructure building as before. So AI can help us do magical things. And I think people are waking up to the magic of AI because they can see what ChatGPT can do for them. So they now understand what generative AI is. And that's what we are. We collect data, we train, and then we can predict the next state.
How much time do you recommend someone wearing the glucose and feeding the app until you have accurate readings?
Yeah, we generally recommend 5 days. And it's the 5 days, that's because we have so many building blocks to this. So we have so many building blocks. I mean, we standardize foods. We have glycemic index and glycemic load of foods. We have, and there's so many elements that go into it. We spent years and years in R&D, which is why you mentioned how much we've spent. That's mostly gone now to marketing, which is what other companies do. Other companies, like mostly the people that have packaged themselves, the whole company is packaged around someone else's product. Those companies essentially are marketing companies. They don't have, you know, they've done a good job educating the public, building a community and that sort of thing. But there's no technology there. We've spent years in research. That's sort of the value that we're trying to bring to the public is help people who can't afford these sensors essentially be able to access them, or people who want to wear sensors. You know, there are people who don't want to wear sensors at all, so they can use the premium product. The people who want to wear sensors, they don't have to wear them all the time. This idea that you should get a subscription to sensors and just constantly be wearing sensors, that works for some people, but not everybody wants to wear a sensor every 2 weeks. Personally, yeah, you know, I've been wearing them for 7 years, but I don't want to wear it on my arm every week. Nope.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense because I've tried them a lot. And to be frank, I've seen the accuracy of these sensors are not always 100%, even 80 and 90, because when I test them with a prick, I will notice like, okay, the readings are not there. They're not delayed. So it becomes a hassle to keep it there and then realize maybe it's not reading properly. So I agree with you. You're not the first to the market. So how did you position yourself or start building the trust among the user base?
Yeah, so we were the first people who put who put sensors on healthy people. We started our clinical trial in 2018, and we put sensors on healthy prediabetes and diabetes people. And we were talking about it all over the place. And I think Levels put out their product, I think in May or June of 2020. And, we then, also in November started sort of selling. So, you know, I think they did a good job educating the market about the importance of blood sugar, which was really useful. But yeah, that we were, you know, we were all over the place in New York Times and lots of different things. So a lot of, we, you know, grew pretty fast with that first product. But we weren't happy with it because it was a little bit more clunky. Because, you know, this is AI wrapped in an app. It's not an app. This is not simple, like get a bunch of people together, build an app. This is like years of data collection and, all these pipelines you have to build to actually execute, AI modeling inside of an app, inside someone's phone. It's not trivial at all. So it was a little clunky. So we built a version 2, put that out. And then now we have a version 3, which is the premium. So now we have 2 and 3 out at the same time. 2 is our pro product and 3 is our free product.
Yeah, amazing. I think, you know, competition is good in that particular domain because you're not competing sure. practically against other sensors. You're competing about against the cereals, the sugars, the confectionery, all of these ads that are promoting other substitute foods that are healthy, which, you know, moves people away from logging their food, following blood sugar. What was the most challenging part about educating your consumers at the beginning? The early adopters are easy, right? They understand the value. They could be biohackers. But then the other layer of people, the mass market, how could you get them to buy in more?
Yeah, I think the biggest problems we've had actually are with the sensors themselves. The biggest problems that we have are people saying that they fell off. That happened a lot, like really, really a lot. The sensors fall off a lot. People say, oh, I was putting my jacket on. It came off in the shower. I was doing this. I was doing that. My kid pulled it off. So that's one really big problem. Another problem is the faulty sensor that you've mentioned. People, that, you know, where the numbers are obviously way off, you know, the numbers are just way too low. And the reason, there's no reason for them to be that low. So we have to replace the sensor to get another one. By the way, the fact that the sensor numbers are different than finger prick numbers, that's normal. We know that. That's well understood. And both Dexcom and Abbott publish their MARD numbers, their error rates. So those are very well understood, and it's not a surprise because you're just measuring two different things. You know, there's blood, and then there's interstitial fluid that you're measuring. That's that you're using that information as a proxy, if you will. So that's understood. So the biggest issues we had were really all about the sensors. It is, you know, the faulty sensors, the falling off sensors, the fact that people, you know, sometimes when they were using flash technology, they would forget to scan the sensor. There were issues logging into the sensor, because if they had had a sensor themselves and it was used with a certain email, then using a new email was challenging. I mean, there's a lot of things associated with the sensor problem. Also just things that are changed in the way that you access the data. So most of our issues were really logistics issues related to the sensor. I think I think as an industry, we have not yet reached a tipping point at all, where we would say, oh, everybody understands blood sugar is important. That's not the case. I think we need to, until we get 20 million people checking their blood sugar every day, and I don't think there are 20 million people who are doing it, we haven't reached any kind of mass adoption. So I think you're saying, was it hard to educate people? No, a lot of optimizers were coming themselves. It wasn't hard. Like in 2018, we put up an ad that said, come do our clinical trial. 26,000 people applied. So it wasn't very hard. People knew enough to come for that, show up pretty fast for that. So that wasn't an issue. I think the issue is the expense of the sensor, and the fact that at the end of the day, they're invasive. I have some very, very big people, 6'4" athletes who look at a little needle and they go, oh, I don't want that in my arm. It's like, no, don't worry. That needle is not actually going to stay in your arm. That needle just delivers a little piece of plastic into your arm, and then the needle leaves. They go, So I think those were more of the challenges, not so much the education comparatively, but education as a whole is an issue. I think that people are not waking up and wanting to manage their blood sugar the same way that they are waking up and saying, ooh, I better do 10,000 steps. I better sleep well. I better sleep 7 or 8 hours. I think they understand those two way better than they understand their blood sugar.
Amazing. Take us back to your early 100 customers. How did you get them? What was the channel that was most attractive to you?
It was definitely more, and we were not doing PR. We had no PR agency, but we were getting written up in the papers. That was the, I think when the New York Times article went out, we got just hundreds of orders at the same time. So it was really my co-founder, Mike Snyder, who is a very well-known scientist, and the fact that, people are asking him, he's wearing a lot of wearables. So people are always asking him about the company, and we got into the press. So that's how we got our first users, was really not paying for them on Facebook and not through PR, but more organically through Mike talking about the product.
Amazing. And then what was the next level of customer acquisition? So organic reach, press, knowing about the co-founders. What was then the next step that you made you scale more the operation?
Yeah, we had some paid blogs. Obviously, we started an SEO program later, and we had a paid acquisition strategy as well. And I would say mostly for V1, there was we were running some paid ads. At the time, people felt like they had to stand in line for a long time and to get this sort of expensive $400 product from other people. And we were selling, you know, for $288. So a lot of people came to us. So a lower cost was a factor for people, because we felt that, you know, we were more interested in gathering data for our digital twins. So that's why we invested that way. We wanted to get more people to go through the program. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's what we were building, you know, we were building the AI. So that was really our focus.
Were there any strategies that were not scalable, their guerrilla marketing that you guys did to also increase your conversion?
I would say, to be honest, we have not marketed the company a whole lot at all. We've just not, Levels in their first year got onto 50 podcasts, and, you know, they are just a marketing, market. And as they are doing market, we're like building more and more and more of our AI. So we're just different companies. So I would say, we've done everything. We've done, SEO, we've done, newsletters, we've done podcasts, we've done conferences, we've done, we haven't done anything like affiliates and, influencers, which I think some of the other folks have done very effectively. But we haven't, focused as much on building sort of a direct to consumer, business. And our goal always has been to be more B2B. So we have a different business that we do that you probably don't know much about, which is a little work that we did with Nestle, and we are doing it with other food companies now. And that is where we use our digital twins to predict glucose response to different foods of these companies, the food industry. And they're interested in knowing sort of how people respond to their candy bar or to their pasta or to their, you know, frozen meals or foods that they have made for people, perhaps with diabetes, or just foods that they have for healthy people in quotes. So we have that line of business as well. We think that our strength is technology and our strength is AI, and we'd like to deploy most of our tech through other people, than to be in a knife fight, you know, doing marketing, like selling other people's tech. Like, to be a marketing company and just to sell other people's sensors all day long is just not inspiring. It's just not interesting.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing the story. What's the principle that you live by that has served you well on your journey?
Focus on a core mission that is, in our case, is helping, you know, almost 100 million people that have pre-diabetes in the U.S. not get diabetes, help them understand kind of where they are. So I think focus on a mission and then focus on an approach to that. Our approach has been developing AI and developing sort of using technology to leapfrog. That's our approach, and we've stuck with it. We've never like pivoted and said, let's stop doing AI. Let's just raise a lot of money and just market all day long and go, you know, we've never done that. So our goal is look at a really, really big problem, come up with a very substantial solution that requires a lot of investment, commit yourself to it, and then get to results, and then try to put that in a lot of people through other businesses. And that's what we're trying to do now. Our goal is to get this technology in the hands of millions of people. That's always been our goal. And we feel that a lot of fantastic companies out there are doing a good job reaching out to the public. And I think, if we can put our technology in their hands, then it all works out.
Absolutely. That's a very noble mission. One last question. What's next for January?
So our current freemium product that we are very, very proud of is a combination of multiple generative AIs, our own generative AI that predicts glucose, and we have generative AI vision that reads a picture and tells you what's in the picture, and a language model that gives it a name. And so we are going to be, I don't know if you've used our free app, but it's really magical. It's really fun. You can hack your macros. You can hack your blood sugar. It's amazing. What's next is to put a fourth generative AI on top of it, which is our AI health coach, which we did implement in our pro product, but now we want to put it into our freemium product. And I think that having your own agent that, you know, is kind of your metabolic health agent is pointing things out to you, and helping you eat well and do the right things and move when it matters and fast and things like that is the place to go. So let's use AI more. Let's get AI to help you even more. And let's get AI to help you make little changes in your life that have a very significant impact over the long term. So more AI.
Absolutely.
AI health coach.
If someone wants to use January, is it available globally or is it in specific markets only?
So the pro is available in the US only, but the freemium is available anywhere in the app store. You can download it. Try it out. We're trying to get feedback. We have someone who's using it in Singapore. We want to know if it recognizes foods elsewhere and if it tells you what it is and if you can, actually use it everywhere else. So our goal is to make it global.
Amazing. Thank you for stopping by, Nusheen. This was a great
episode. Thanks, Heidi.
We wish you the best of luck. How can people reach you?
They can reach me on LinkedIn, just at Nusheen Hashemi.
Amazing. We'll put that in the show notes. Good luck on your journey.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Thank you so much for listening to the First 100. We hope it inspired you in your journey. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe to our podcast on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify, and share it with a friend starting their entrepreneurship journey. Leave us a 5-star review. Your support will help spread our podcast to more viewers.